The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Alternatives podcast. I'm Adit Chakraborty.
Hi guys, how you doing? Okay, so this is the main part of Green Lab. So I'm now in the, we call it the incubator room. And what I'm looking at are five 15-litre drink cooler bottles. And they're all green and bubbling away. And this is spirulina. You can eat it.
This is Andy Gregson, founder of Green Lab.
The lab itself is essentially like an open innovation lab. And in plain speak, it allows people to develop an idea that they have that explores more efficient use of either a food system, our waste that we generate, or use of water. So we grow things here.
Green Lab calls itself a makerspace, and it's part of one of the most intriguing movements in the British economy today. Makerspaces is a loose term that covers everything from IT through to ceramics. But if there's one thing they've got in common, is they pose a challenge to the way the British economy is structured now. There's a common view that Britain really doesn't make things anymore, that really all we British should do is consume stuff and sit back with our Chinese-made televisions. Well, in makerspaces, people do make things. Crumbly old buildings, using borrowed bits of kit. And in central London, they're a direct affront to the idea that really all the land's for is to build flats on.
You know, Green Lab has the potential to provide affordable access to services that allow people to farm and grow. It's located in the heart of the City of London. You know, Bermondsey Tube Station, as you can probably hear as the cars go by, is located 60 seconds just probably north of here, which links into London Bridge. So we're in a really interesting spot where we can attract university students from Imperial College, Royal College of Art, University of Arts London, University College London, to develop early stage ideas in the realm of kind of food, waste and water, which is what we look at, that they couldn't do anywhere else. You know, we've got access to, most of the equipment here is either refurbed, secondhand, or on long-term loan from previous either relationships with other companies I've worked with, or from the things that I've acquired over the past 5 or 6 years in working in this kind of industry. I think another thing that could come out of this lab, if we can help to inspire a younger generation. So we run a number of regular sessions with schools. We had one this week, 30 school kids learning how to grow microgreens using recycled 500ml bottles. So inspiring others to develop their own, projects in the space. John, who's one of our residents, he's trying to develop a kombucha brand. He's got access to the space, very little, and he's developing his own brand of, you know, this fermented tea. We have Satya, who's based in the lower part of the lab. He's basically growing microgreens for local restaurants in West London. We have Entocycle, who are a black soldier fly farm, and they're looking to automate the process of taking, you know, what we consider to be waste, which is basically spent organic matter, such as coffee grounds or malt, spent hops from a brewery, feeding it to insects, and then the insects become a high protein for the aquaculture sector. So for salmon, and maybe then pigs, and possibly sheep. Yeah, and then we have Anushka, who's looking at tanning fish skins into leather. And my personal interest is more kind of the realms of blockchain and agriculture, artificial intelligence and data, which is a real, you know, left field, but technology can be applied to agriculture in many ways. And it's not just about growing food, it's also about using technology as well.
One thing that strikes me about the setup of this place is that you're getting this place from a charity, and the people who access it can sometimes access it for free, right? So you're not applying normal market rules to the people who come in here and use the equipment. This entire realm exists outside the market.
Yeah, it's a bit like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory. I think we offer different things to different people. You know, the ones who are funded and are looking to make commercial gain, then, you know, you'll have silver will cross my palm before you walk through the door, so to speak. Those of you who are looking to gain, you know, new skills, knowledge, insight, and are willing to share it with others, then there's a different conversation, because we can offer the space for literally next to nothing, maybe in exchange for, can you, you know, work for half a day a week to help build this fish system, or help install a vermiculture, which is a composting system, or help establish the algae we're growing, then that kind of trade of the kind of value exchange works for us. And I think, you know, having places like this in a city, which frankly, you know, the property prices are rising, the rents are rising, having this access to this resource so early on in the development of an idea is invaluable. And I think that the flexibility that we offer in terms of the machines and the depth of knowledge of the people in here. You know, I was born in 68. And I know you keep shaking your head, but I've been through a lot over the past 40 years through lots of technology companies. And I come with a set of experiences that I can then pass on to John, who's probably, I think he's just sub 30. Anushka's in her mid-20s. Some of the partners who work in a different capacity are here maybe once, twice a month. They've all come from, you know, private wealth or from the world of kind of Coca-Cola or Tesco. They're all bringing their skills to bear on this, because we realize that, you know, without these places, you know, the UN have got a target of 2050, 11 billion people on the planet. How do we feed that body of people? We're not going to provide all the answers, but we're one piece in that jigsaw that can help facilitate maybe a single solution that may resolve some issues in the city around urban resilience, or maybe in North Africa around the use of waste and greater, better sanitation. So it's quite a diverse set of offers.
These are really big goals. You're talking about a massive expanse in population and a big threat to our climate, and you're talking about being part of a group of people that comes up with solutions to some of those problems. That's a really big goal. Is that really how high you're aiming?
Yes. I mean, for me, that's it was only recently, probably maybe 15 months ago, that I started to really look at the numbers. I was driven by curiosity and an interest in the natural world to create this place. You know, having been a wannabe marine biologist from the age of 9, never quite got there. Parents bought me a VIC-20 back in the mid-80s, and I was into technology. I've now come full circle back. But for me, those numbers are the driving force behind what we're trying to do here. And I think without that clear goal and that end mission, we're just, you know, it's like a big shed we're playing in. We need some clear, you know, targets, some clear objectives to try and hit. And it's not just me that's doing this. There are hundreds of organizations across the planet trying to support these, you know, goals. And so we're just one of many with a similar mindset in a collective, with a community of, you know, talented individuals trying to attract some really smart people in the space to solve some of the kind of, you know, really pressing issues that face this planet.
Tell me about the light bulb moment. How did you get to the point when you thought, these are the themes I need to be working on?
I used to love technology. Now I'd rather have my hands dirty building things in the space. And so it took me a lot of time to go back to the desktop, to the screen, to literally think and articulate these ideas in slide form. We produced like a deck that we share. And it was after conversations with people in the space over a number of months. So Eve, who's a WASH specialist, which is waste and sanitary health. She's doing a PhD at UCL. She specializes in waste. Dominic, who's a postdoc at Bartlett, his area is water. Yeah. And Mark, who's one of the co-founding partners, his area is food. So it's conversations with everybody in the lab to try and formulate, why are we doing this? And they always ask me the question, what's your end goal? What's the end purpose? And I couldn't answer the question at the time. So it's taken me, you know, maybe six, seven attempts to get the answer right. I didn't start this venture out to tackle food poverty. It was very much an exploratory notion. Will a fab lab or a makerspace work with a food focus? And actually, it does.
Let's talk a bit about makerspaces, and in particular, the city, because you would count as being a makerspace, one of those places where people can come, open access, and they can use the tools, some very expensive tools here, and they can collaborate with other people and they can get expertise. And there are, I don't know, I think there are various estimates of how many makerspaces there are, but somewhere around 100, maybe more. The thing about makerspaces in London is you're competing for land with developers that want to build houses. And I think that's even true of here, right? This place is all going to be knocked down and turned into houses and shops. What does that mean for people like you? You're doing all this incredibly important stuff which has obviously got a social value. How does our property obsessed country change what you do?
Yeah, you're right. This will be demolished probably within 9 to 12 months, possibly. It's something I've lived with over the past 10 years in running spaces like this. So for me, it's a natural, we evolve and I have to be agile. So I have to carry very little waste. I think the having access to low cost or low rent or even peppercorn rent properties for short periods of time, there needs to be more, I think, across the city, or at least an easier way to access, a way to find out where these properties exist. The Section 106, that any developer who has a new development has an obligation to provide some of the development for, you know, general community use, which kind of fits the Fab Lab model. I think finding more of these opportunities, what I'm seeing is that they're moving further and further, either east or north or west. So the kind of hub of the city where you'll find a lot of the activities where people tend to congregate and where they tend to work, there's few opportunities. And if they are, it's through a kind of a closed network. I know someone through somebody else, through somebody else, somebody else. It makes it difficult. And you'll see that I've seen a lot of makerspaces of the past 12 to 18 months close.
Andy, are you part of a movement?
I think, you know, maker movement is something that's hit the press over the past, was it 5-6 years? In that respect, possibly yes. But in terms of the kind of green Fab Lab, there are a few, and actually it's ironic, because I was actually inspired by a green Fab Lab in Barcelona. They have a lovely farmhouse set in the middle of 150 hectares of prime Barcelona campo, and it's called Valdara, and they look at sustainable cities. And Thomas Diaz, who's one of the gentlemen who runs it, with Jonathan Minchin, who I've met a number of times, they inspired me to think about developing a green space. So there's probably two of us. And there's also space in the Amazon. There's an Amazon Fab Lab. There's a Fab Lab on a boat in the Amazon. And they're looking at biodiversity. Okay, so there are a number of different spaces like this, certainly across the network I'm aware of. Space 10, for example, is an IKEA-based incubator, and they look at, future living systems. There's the Future Living Lab, which is based, I think, here east, which is near Stratford. So there's a trend to develop more of these types of spaces. University of West London are interested in developing something like this. In fact, we're developing an installation at the Tate Modern this week on the fifth floor that's part of the Tate Exchange to build a growing space with some of the equipment from the lab. So, you know, from what I'm seeing, there's an appetite. There's some pressing issues to address, and there's an interest. You know, there's a real interest in these types of spaces. Certainly, if it's focused on a specific sector. Yeah.
What you do, Andy, is obviously of massive social value, and yet what I'm left wondering is, how far do people in politics, how far do people in markets, how far do they actually understand what you do, and how far are they actually willing to help you?
From the people we've spoken to, there's a number of different groups. I think the people in agriculture understand it, they get it, they're very supportive. You know, they're happy to help us spread the message of what we do through their networks. The investment community get it. You know, they're investing in a whole range of different agricultural initiatives, and they'll see a return at some point. And that's something we'd like to look to as an incubator in the next probably 6 to 12 months. And you know, some of the general public understand it. We have a number of people who visit the event space to learn about brewing kombucha, starting their own aquaponics farm, starting hydroponics. I think when you say the politicians, I think if we can provide them with, I guess, a layperson's view of what these machines can offer in a context they'll understand in terms of numbers, that this will scale, that we can reduce air pollution by X using these types of systems, then I think the message would be a lot clearer. So that, for me, is something that we need to be much better at and create opportunities within our network to share that kind of data with that network of individuals.
All right, so if all these people are so supportive and they all get it, then I want to help your movement by setting up my own green lab. What do I need to go and do?
I think this comes back to your previous question about the cost of land in London, in that you have to find a space to operate from, or at least find a partner who's willing to take the risk of putting you in their space in the first place. Equipment isn't cheap. 3D printers aren't necessarily core to agriculture, but they can help facilitate the production of enclosures, i.e. boxes that go around electronics. Laser cutters, they start good ones at around £20,000. So you either have a long-term loan, or you go and find somebody who's got very deep pockets, willing to invest in this as a potential future, you know, future return. I think for me it would be partnerships are great. You know, schools sometimes don't have access to these facilities. Finding a partner in this sector, whether it be a school, a local council, a library that's looking to change what it offers its community. Libraries are great places to, as cohesive places to meet, learn about all manner of different subjects. Lots of libraries have been turned into spaces with 3D printers. There's no reason why a corner of it couldn't become a grow space with simple hydroponics. So look for resources within your community that are either accessible or are open to partnerships, either from an education perspective. Because I think if you start with education, it makes things a lot easier. If you start with incubation and startups and investment, the conversation is going to be short because it's about cash. And it's about what's my exit strategy and how soon can I exit and where do I get investment, what's the term sheets. If you start with education, I think your net is cast much wider, and if it's driven by community interest, you'll have a much better support of a local community and traction of people within that area. Having access to the machines is a completely different, you know, conversation. It's either loan, borrow, eBay, find. You know, a lot of the equipment in here has been accumulated over the past 4 or 5 years. There are lots of sheds across London with tools that can be used. There are lots of 3D printers, I guess, that are sat there doing nothing in schools. Yeah. But again, it comes back to the first question. It's also about serendipity. You never know who's around the corner that can help you with your project or your initiative. So, you know, walk with open eyes.
That's it from The Alternatives this week. Get in touch at alternatives@theguardian.com. The producers were Lily Ames and Phil Maynard. See you next time.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.